Hello, all of you out there in Radioland. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website at kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. You can't catch COVID from listening to Our Town. Listening to Our Town is an extremely safe way to meet some of the passionate and vibrant people who make Jefferson County so very wonderful. Broadcasting in the age of COVID has been challenging, but hopefully we're past the worst of it. It's much more interesting and fun to interview guests in person. When you can look at someone, look into their eyes, watch their body language, well, you get a much better feeling for them. Questions flow much easier. Zoom has its undeniable merits, but I believe in in-person interviews. Let's hope one-on-one interviews are back to being normal. Right now, we're all nervously looking over our shoulders, wondering if COVID is really ready to jump back in. I sure hope not. Do you remember the relatively recent days of what I might dub old Port Townsend? One of the things that edition of Port Townsend had going for it was the music of summer, the wonderful music. Do you remember that? Do you remember the concerts, particularly the concerts at Fort Worden? We have now had two consecutive summers where the music has been largely silenced. Sure, you could listen to music in the privacy of your own home, but we all know the experience of listening to music online or even on radio or TV is not the same as listening in a concert venue. Well, have you heard? Our most treasured music maker, Centrum, is planning on summer 2022 with actual in-person concerts. You're going to hear all about it right here on Our Town. My guest today is Rob Berman, Executive Director of Centrum. He's going to tell us all about the plans for the upcoming summer months. He will also tell us about year-round activities at Centrum. So welcome to the show, Rob.
Thank you, Marianne. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, before we talk about Centrum and the summer of the return, the big return, I think we should get to know you a little bit. Find out where you came from and how you ended up here. So, Rob, you're a Jefferson County native, born and bred here on the peninsula?
I'm sorry to say that I'm not.
Okay. Where'd you come from?
I came from Berwyn, Pennsylvania, which is just outside Philadelphia, suburban Philadelphia.
Now, you told me the other day that it's on the main line, and I've heard that before, the term main line, but I've never known what it means. Bet most of our listeners don't know. What does it mean?
Well, the main line refers to the train lines that service Center City, Philadelphia. It's kind of like a hub and spoke system, but the main line was the main train line that ran to the suburbs of Philadelphia in the very early years, yeah, out through areas like Bryn Mawr and Villanova and Haverford and places like Rosemont that I think you came from, or you didn't.
Nope.
but areas that people will know mainly for universities and colleges all along the suburban route.
Well, give us a second synopsis of your family situation. Were you an only child?
No, I'm one of six.
Oh, that's a big passel of kids.
Yeah. I'm second youngest, and I spent my entire life in Berwyn, Pennsylvania, up through graduate school.
Okay. And in your home environment, was it expected that you and your siblings would all go on to university?
I think it was, yes. We were fortunate to have books and encyclopedias and things like that in the house. And my mother actually went to school after raising six kids.
Wow.
For her graduate program. She went to St. Catharines in Minnesota as an undergraduate in the 1940s. My mother's 95 years old. But my father was an engineer and she was a music teacher. And she went on to get her master's in piano after raising six kids.
Wow. Well, so was she from Minnesota?
She was from Minnesota.
How did your parents happen to get together then?
Well, believe it or not, Marianne, they met in Saigon. So my father was in the Marines and my mother was teaching over there, and they met in Saigon. My father was from Michigan and my mother from Minnesota. So that was the commonality.
But you just told us that based on the dates, it doesn't sound like this was part of the Vietnam era.
No, well before that. Yeah.
Okay. It still is interesting, meeting in Saigon, sort of romantic in a way.
Yeah, they actually got married in Saigon. I've seen the home films. There were monkeys running around. But because of my mother's Catholic upbringing, they had to have a service in the United States when they got home. So they got married twice.
Oh. I didn't know they had that rule, but who can tell?
Well, I think it was for her mother's benefit.
Yeah, okay. Well, were you one of the rare kids who was real focused and knew what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, I played sports and I played music, and those were my two main interests when I was a youth. And it led me to have to make decisions as I got close to being a senior in high school about the path I wanted to walk. And by that time in my education, I was debating between music and physics.
And a little bit different.
One day walking home from school, it just cemented in my mind, I definitely want to go down the path of music as a career. So I did that. I studied music and got a degree in music performance at Temple University and went on to an arts administration master's program and decided to be an administrator in the arts field as a career. And it's been wonderful.
Wow, that's really interesting that you were so focused from a young age. I mean, did you find grades and studies really easy? Did you sort of sail through?
Well, I did well in school throughout college also, but I think it was probably around the start of high school that I really learned the value of a little bit of discipline. So what I found was with just a little bit of effort, I could keep up with my schoolwork and achieve good grades. And it surprised me how little time it really took to actually cover the material and be prepared for tests. It was more or less an hour a night.
Yeah, most kids don't really seem to figure that out.
Well, I learned it from my peers rather than from my home. Huh. I got seated at a table with some of the best kids in my class and wanted to keep up. Maybe that was the competitive spirit in me. Huh. And that's when I realized, wow, with just a little bit of application, I can keep up with all of this schoolwork. And
did they have a system for seating at the table?
I have no idea, because it was this one science class that introduced me to that echelon of students. Huh. So it might have just been alphabetical.
Yeah, because I know in my high school it was alphabetical. And so I'm McNellis, so I was seated near the M's.
Yes. And so, interestingly, to this day, these are kids that I went from elementary school all the way through senior year. So I've known these kids since I was young. Four or five of us are still closest friends.
That's amazing.
And we're all over the world.
That's great, really.
It is kind of neat.
It's really good to have long-term friends like that. So when you first graduated, what did you do immediately?
Well, when I got out of grad school,
right,
I applied for a year of internships, and I was really fortunate back then, this would have been 1989, to get a year of paid internships.
That's pretty rare.
Today, I think it's exceptionally rare. And even then, it was the exception, not the rule. Most internships were unpaid.
Right.
So I worked at the National Endowment for the Arts in Washington during the Mapplethorpe scandal.
Wow.
I worked at the Colorado Music Festival in Boulder, and I worked at the New World Symphony in Miami Beach with Michael Tilson Thomas.
Wow.
And that took a year to do those three positions.
That's impressive to do that.
It was pretty fascinating.
Yeah. And so as you were nearing the end of that, you were obviously applying for jobs. And what was your strategy?
Well, my hope was to manage symphony orchestras.
Right.
And I did a second year at the Colorado Music Festival, but my condition for returning was that I could go to the national conference that summer, which was in Washington, D.C. And at that conference every year, there's a cattle call of interviews. So a lot of jobs change hands at the conference each year. If the person in Harrisburg gets the job offer to go to Tucson, that creates an opening in Harrisburg. And everybody concentrated their interviews at the conference because that way you didn't have to fly people to your hometown. So I wanted to go to the conference. I interviewed for four or five positions and was offered one in Dubuque, Iowa when I was 25 years old.
Well, I take it that you had sort of decided you didn't want to continue to be in Philadelphia.
Yes, I did. I really wanted to see the world, or the country at the least. I wanted diversity of experience and to see what geographical differences there were and how that impacted the way people were raised and philanthropy and all of the exciting things about this country.
Okay, so there you were, 25 years old, went to Iowa for, I assume, the first time.
Yes.
What was that experience like?
Iowa was a very safe place to start.
Yeah.
So I was 25. I'd never worked with a board. I'd never had control of a budget and all the things you have when you run a company.
Right.
I was the executive director of the Dubuque Symphony. And again, it was a safe place. So I was surrounded by people that cared and had a great quality of life and a pace that was very manageable. Expectations weren't awfully high. And it was a great place for me to show what I could do and to make some mistakes, quite frankly, and be in a safe place where those mistakes would become learning opportunities.
So how large, I don't know how you define this, but maybe budget-wise or members of the orchestra, how big was it?
Well, it was a full-size orchestra, although a lot of our players commuted in from Chicago. But budget is the normal way symphonies distinguish themselves. Basically, around the country, orchestras divide themselves into 10 classifications. The 10th being $40 million and bigger, and number one being less than $50,000 in a year.
Wow.
There are a lot of orchestras in the country that have budgets of $100,000. That's probably the majority of orchestras. They are community orchestras, and they're mostly unpaid players.
Okay. In that top tier of $40 million and above, name a couple of those.
Well, the LA Philharmonic is the biggest in the country.
Okay.
But that's because of the Hollywood Bowl. Chicago Symphony is very big. Boston Symphony is very big. I know the Philadelphia Orchestra has a budget of $44 million a year, or they did a few years ago. So Atlanta, Chicago, Pittsburgh, these are the big orchestras.
And so I assume Iowa was not on the bottom, but it was nowhere near the top, right?
Yes, I think it was group 7 out of 10, meaning third smallest.
Okay. And so how long were you there?
I only stayed in Iowa for 2 years. That was because I was a young, single guy, and I didn't find Iowa the ideal place for me to find relationships.
Yes, I can see that.
People were great. The quality of life was amazing. The scenery was beautiful. The orchestra was great. It was a great quality of life, but I wanted a little bit of ambition, and I wanted to get into the city.
Yeah, you probably wanted a little bit more excitement.
Yeah.
Okay. And so...
Bear in mind, I had been in Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Miami Beach before going to Dubuque.
Yeah.
So I ended up leaving Dubuque and moving to Boston.
Okay.
There are 50 orchestras in Boston.
You're kidding me.
It's a very competitive marketplace, rich musical history and legacy there.
50 orchestras. That's
amazing.
And
I worked for the one orchestra that was musician-owned. So the musicians were the cooperative management of the entire organization.
That's interesting.
I wanted to do that because there were only two examples of those at the time. The other was Seattle. The Seattle Symphony, some years back, left the musicians union and formed their own union, and the musicians got to manage and make decisions on behalf of the Seattle Symphony.
Is it still that way?
It is still that way, although Seattle Symphony is a bit of a corporate juggernaut these days, but they're not members of the American Federation of Musicians. They have their own union in Seattle.
Interesting.
And I think it's unprecedented. I think they're the only one in the country that have their own union.
Okay, now you said earlier that you spent 25 years managing symphony orchestras, and now you've said only two of those were in Iowa. Where else were you?
Well, one was in Iowa, one in Boston. I then left Boston. I went to Santa Barbara, California.
Nice.
Ran the orchestra there with a woman conductor who I actually worked with in Boston as well. She recruited me to come to the West Coast. I led that orchestra for 7 years and then moved to San Francisco and ran a world-class Baroque period instrument orchestra that got to play all over the world. I led that orchestra from an administrative standpoint for 7 years and then went to Louisville, Kentucky. And helped turn that orchestra around. It was facing near bankruptcy at the time. This was during the recession, prior to coming to Port Townsend. And we saved that orchestra, and today it's thriving and flourishing.
Huh. So immediately before you went to Kentucky, you were in California, in Santa Barbara, and then San Francisco.
Yes.
Why did you choose to go to Kentucky? What was the...
Well, I was at the conference that I mentioned earlier.
Right.
I went to the annual conference, and a headhunter that I respected wanted me to sit down with this gentleman from the Louisville Orchestra. I had never really known much about the Louisville Orchestra.
Nope.
What I found was there was a gentleman from the board of directors running the orchestra for $1 a year. And he was trying to find a professional to come in and actually be the executive director. The fact that he was working for a dollar a year was an indication of the financial strain that they were under. But they felt at that moment, this was in 2008, before the recession started, it was time for them to pay a professional manager to come in and really try to fix the ills of that organization. And when I sat with him and he started to tell me all the things they were doing, I kept saying to him, "You're doing everything right." I was intrigued because they were making really good decisions. And honestly, the challenge of walking into a fairly dysfunctional crisis situation compelled me quite a lot. I thought it would be exciting to go in and try to be a source of change and fiscal stability and health. And it was not easy because the recession then started literally the week that I got to Kentucky was the start of the Great Recession, August 2008.
Okay. And you said you went through bankruptcy.
Yes. We took the organization through Chapter 11 reorganization. We didn't cancel a single concert. We managed to successfully get through the bankruptcy process to reorganize the organization. Then we went into a year-long labor impasse because what we needed was a smaller contingent of full-time musicians in order to make the orchestra sustainable. And I had offered to do that through attrition so that nobody would lose their job. But as I mentioned to you the other day, I knew the musicians could not agree to what we were asking because it would have set a precedent for the other unions around the country. Mm-hmm. So we never blamed the musicians for not agreeing, but it took a year of impasse for them to come around. And we went through an arbitration, which is very standard in the symphony world. And they ended up getting an agreement that was what we were seeking in the first place. But they didn't have to appear complicit in that decision.
Right.
Because it was done through an arbitrator. Yeah.
And so you were there for a couple of years?
7 years.
So you have seven as your number.
Yes.
I think. Okay. And your next job was Port Townsend. Now, there's a sort of leap. How and why did you end up in Port Townsend?
Well, I always wanted to be in the Pacific Northwest, but more importantly, my mother-in-law lives here. So we had been visiting here every year. She was in Anacortes for some time and then in Port Ludlow, where she is today. And my wife and I would come out and visit once a year. And I was in Kentucky and picked up a copy of the Chronicle of Philanthropy, and I saw a job listing for Centrum in Port Townsend. And I couldn't believe it. The odds that I would find something here and allow my wife to be closer to her mother are probably one in a million.
Yeah. And were you already familiar with Centrum?
Not a lot. I had been to Fort Worden. I wasn't intimately familiar with Centrum because all the times I came here, I only had 1 week. Right. So we really spent a lot of the time with the family. And we were really in Port Ludlow, but we would come into Port Townsend once or twice during that week. Mm-hmm. And I'd seen the fort. Once I looked into what we were doing here in town, most especially the concept of the PDA, that really excited me and got me interested in coming here because, again, like Louisville, this was going to be a very complex challenge.
What year was this?
That was 2013, right at the end of the recession.
And you told me you were so enamored of the idea, you bought your own airline ticket.
I did, yes. The committee here didn't want to fly me in. They had 140 applicants for the position. But I really wanted to come and sell myself to this organization. So I paid my own way to come.
Okay, and you won.
I did.
You got here. When did you actually relocate?
I relocated in March 2013. So this is my 10th year. I finished my 9th year, and I'm just starting my 10th.
So you've broken out of the 7.
Yes. This is the longest I've stayed anywhere.
And what was the overall status of Centrum when you started?
Centrum was coming out of the recession. We were fairly deep in debt at that time. Nothing on the scale of Louisville. But we were a year behind in paying our bills to state parks, as an example. The PDA didn't formally exist yet as a leaseholder at the fort. That didn't happen until 2014. And I helped support that process when I was new. But the organization was struggling financially, I would say. Obviously, they had incredible loyalty and national following here at Centrum. But they needed discipline and focus and ambition. I think that's what they were missing.
So probably the fact that you took Louisville through the Chapter 11 was a selling point for them. They liked that in your background.
I think they liked it in the sense that they knew I wouldn't panic.
Yeah.
But Centrum wasn't in the position of facing bankruptcy. It wasn't that dire.
Okay.
Louisville had something in the range of $6.5 million of debt. So by comparison, Centrum was just simply in a lull.
You know, most locals think of Centrum as a, you know, nice big concerts or maybe blues in the clubs, something like that. But there's a lot more going on. And in fact, I was surprised to find out that the international and national scope. I know you have some numbers at your fingertips, so give us a little of that.
Well, first, our programming is about much more than just music, although music is predominant.
Right.
We do writing programs, we do a huge array of youth programs, and we do artist residencies all year round. We have participants every year at Centrum, at least in the last few years, from 17 different countries, from all 50 states, and from 77% of the counties in Washington. What we do every year, Marianne, is we take the database of people that entered our programs or bought tickets, and we put it in Google Maps, and we can get a literal map of where everybody came from, who came through our doors. We do that every year, and it's fascinating to look at.
Yeah. How do they hear about it?
Well, most of our advertising for the workshops are in trade journals, Downbeat Magazine, Poet and Writers Magazine, things like that. Most of those journals go out all over the world. They're not just local or regional or national. We get exposed to the jazz musicians and the writers who live all over the planet.
I'd sort of like to get, for our listeners, a little snapshot of Centrum, but in a funny way, we're going to have to divide it into 2 points,
okay.
You know, sort of pre-pandemic and post-pandemic.
Sure.
So financially and every other measurement, what was going on between 2013 and, I guess, 2020? Is that
right.
Where you...
Well, I would say that what we were focused on in pre-pandemic was getting our house in order and building our balance sheet. It doesn't sound very sexy, but we built a cash reserve fund so that we wouldn't have to rely on bank debt the way we were when I came. We've been totally debt-free for the last 7 years. So we built a small cash reserve, basically 3 months of liquidity. We built our endowment fund by 600% since I came here. Now, it's still less than $1 million, so it's not very big, but I'm anxious to see that continue to grow because, in my opinion, that builds stability for the long term. And again, the biggest thing we did was stay current with our bills. When I came here, we were very delinquent in paying our bills. And the PDA helped us do that, actually, because they required us to stay current. And we managed to make that happen.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's very good. So things were rolling along quite successfully, and then the pandemic hit.
Yes.
And so, in a just broad overview, how did it impact Centrum?
Well, it hurt Centrum quite a lot. We lost 90% of our earned revenue, obviously, because of the pandemic, like most other people in the country. We laid off 40% of our seasonal staff, which is mainly our summer crew. Many of those are just beginning to come back. And we qualified for some federal and state loans and grants, the PPP loan, for example, the Shuttered Venues Grant Program. So we were fortunate because we qualified for relief. And we came through the pandemic actually probably stronger than when we went in. We also made some strategic decisions, which bears on the next 10 years, in that we built this broadcasting capability because we realized during the pandemic that we could make online participation a permanent part of what we do at Centrum.
Right. You don't have to just limit it to the pandemic.
Right. So we actually invested quite a lot in a complete broadcast facility during the pandemic. And the first year that that will really show its value is this coming year, 2022.
Right now, we're in early spring, and your plans, Centrum's plans, are to resume most of the concerts and the sessions. I don't mean to just restrict, you know. How's it going so far?
It's going pretty well. We're seeing a nice steady rate of registrations for our workshops and conferences. Tickets just went on sale last week. We're seeing a nice rate of interest in coming back to live concerts. We've been doing some small events in the Wheeler Theater since the start of this calendar year. I think there's a pent-up demand to get back and to be together.
Well, I happened to go online the very first day and to buy some tickets, and it was about noon, and several events were already sold out.
Yes.
I was like, what?
Yeah. Like, well, the Wheeler only has 280 seats. And before the pandemic, virtually everything we did in the Wheeler was sold out because it's not a lot of seats. 280 seats for a community of 10,000 people really isn't that many seats.
Right.
So we have a good showing in the Wheeler Theater. We do sell out some events in the McCurdy Pavilion, but generally speaking, we can accommodate outdoor seating. We can flex in terms of scale if there's high demand for the McCurdy.
The McCurdy, what does that seat?
That has 1,200 seats.
Okay. And I also noticed while combing through the offerings that a number of them are out on the green.
Yes, we made that decision intentionally because of COVID and the BA2 variant. Fiddle Tunes in particular, all of those shows will be on the Littlefield Green, which we do traditionally a few times a year anyway. We're just going to make all of the events for that July 4th weekend outdoors.
The Littlefield Green is where? Outside McCurdy?
Yes, it's right outside the McCurdy.
Yeah, I didn't realize it had a name.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
It's named after one of our board members, Ed Littlefield, who donated money when we renovated the McCurdy Pavilion.
And so we're running pretty short on time here, but I'd sort of like to get your thoughts about the upcoming season.
We're excited. We have artists from all over the world coming this season. Our full calendar is online at centrum.org. We'll have some online opportunities for people that can't be in Port Townsend or choose not to be in Port Townsend. We are operating with a vaccine mandate, so every guest at Centrum has to be up to date with their vaccines, including staff. We will have mask mandates in the Wheeler Theater because there's limited ventilation in there.
So what you're saying is Centrum has set its own rules.
Yes.
And you're not awaiting anointment by the CDC or anything like that.
No, we're following the guidance, but as an employer, we have the prerogative to determine mask mandates and things like that, just like any other business does.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose you, like everyone else, are waiting to see. Right now, we think you can go as planned and have it in the Wheeler?
Yes. So long as people are masked, we feel that that's a safe environment. Okay. Plus, all the audience members are vaccinated.
One last little sideways question. I noticed in your CV that you're an avid hickory golfer.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, I play with golf clubs from before 1935. So my set of clubs is from 1915, and I've got another set from 1890 that I use.
Okay. Learn something new every day.
It's really fun. Okay. And it brings me back to what the game once was when it was founded in the British Isles.
Well, Rob, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Rob Berman, Executive Director of Centrum. In addition to thanking Rob, I want to thank Taylor Clark, the editor and producer of Our Town. I want to thank you, the listener. Thank you for sticking with KPTZ during these troubled times. Hopefully, we're near the end of this miserable pandemic and opening the door to some sunshine and happiness. Show's called Our Town. I'm Marianne McNellis, signing off for today. But please keep listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Marianne McNellis and edited by Taylor Clark.